Next step 643, Twin Prime, October 1st, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the next step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Where and how do you start a broadcast, a message about a topic you hoped you would never have to talk about, but somehow deep down you knew it was going to come up. You knew that it was inevitable. It was going to happen at some point. You just kind of hope that you could put it off. War in Artsakh. I know, we've said it, right? It's still very difficult to say. War in Artsakh. We've said war in Iraq. We've talked about war in Syria. War about all kinds of places. But when it's close to home, when it is home, it's difficult to put those words together. Saturday was the anniversary of my ordination, and every year on that day, it's a very personal experience that I go through. Because you start thinking about, well, like any mark in time, just like New Year's, when it comes up, you start accounting for how the year behind you went. You look forward to the year ahead of you. And so again, once again, I found myself in that anniversary mode where you start doing a self-evaluation. You take an inventory of what you've done and your accomplishments and how does it fare up against your expectations. And in my case, being a priest, the expectations that you would feel that maybe God would have of you, that if it is a unique calling, if it is a blessed calling, if it is a sacred calling, then perhaps that there is an accountability that's a little bit higher up than just to yourself. Maybe, perhaps not. And that's part of the mental gymnastics that we play too. And so in the midst of all of this Saturday night, I get a call and I'm told that this is it. It's not just fighting on the border. This is it. This is an invasion on Artsakh by the Azeri troops. And by morning, after trying to find as much news as you can, and by the way, that's a very difficult thing. It's not only remote on the other side of the world. For me, 12 time zones away. So it's literally the other side of the planet. And in this day and age, with all kinds of computer know-how, expertise, and news traveling at the speed of light, you'd be very surprised how little information you can dig up. Because it's still, you know, very remote. It's not only on a remote place on the planet, it's a remote place geographically. Last year when we went to Artsakh, when you get into Artsakh, they do not stamp your passport with a visa. Your visa is given to you on an extra card. And I asked, why? Why was that? Well, because it's not recognized. Yeah. It's a small little enclave, they call it. It's filled with Armenians. It's always been part of Armenia. You know, like, what's that? COVID-19. You know, there's a whole assortment of preventatives that have come out now. These are sanitizers, hand sanitizers. Do you read it carefully? It says 99.99% of germs are killed by these sanitizers. Well, Artsakh is a place where it's 99.99% Armenian. It's filled with Armenians. There's that number. It's like, oh, yeah, maybe there's one Russian over there. Maybe you might find an Azeri sitting around, but, you know, it's 99%. It's all Armenian. You go everywhere, it's in Armenian. Everything, Armenian currency, it flies over there. You know, it's like you can use Armenian currency. In fact, internationally, when you want to call Artsakh, it's the same country code as Armenia. But for some reason, well, we know the reasons, but for some reason, let's say it that way, the international community doesn't want to accept it. Back in 1923, this was a small little place that Joseph Stalin gave to the Azeris. Filled with Armenians, gave it to Azeris, and since then it's been unrest over there because they think they have legitimate claim to the area. And back in 1988, there was the Karabakhian movement. Now, Karabakh, yeah, that's the actual name that's given on the international scene. The traditional name of this area is Artsakh, so I'll use those words interchangeably. I'd prefer using Artsakh, but I understand you've got to do that Karabakh thing because that's what it's known as for many people, and it has been known. But we're talking about the same area over there, and the Azeris came in Sunday morning, our time, Saturday night, but Sunday morning. They took advantage. Not only the advantage of a sleeping population, of a sleeping world. Okay, I want to focus in on that expression right now. A sleeping population versus a sleeping world, okay? They attacked in Artsakh early Sunday morning when you could say technically the population was asleep. But of course, on the border, there are guards that are standing there. There are soldiers there. And the Azeris came and they killed innocent people. They targeted civilian populations and they killed innocent people just this last Sunday, September 27, yeah. Date for me, which will remain an infamy, to use Roosevelt's words. So they came in while, yeah, you could say that the people were sleeping, but the world was sleeping. And this is, I want to really focus in on this. The world was asleep. Do you know when else they were asleep? There's another time in history that the world was asleep. It was in 1915. There was rumblings all around the world about a world war coming up. There was instability. There were financial problems. There were difficulties all over the place. And the world was preoccupied with so many things that the Turks said, you know what? We'll take care of these Armenians once and for all. And the Armenian genocide took place 1915. It began 1915, a systematic program of annihilation, genocide. Sure, there were massacres, there were pogroms, there were all kinds of evil taking place in Armenia. Yes, traditional Armenia, historic Armenia, occupied today by the Turks, and at that time occupied by the Ottoman Empire. All kinds of horrible evil events that were taking place and it culminated in 1915 with genocide because the world was basically their focus was somewhere else. Well, think about it. Where's our focus this year, 2020? Oh, yeah, we started off with a pandemic. We started off with COVID-19, calling it a coronavirus. And then the shutdown of countries, debates about whether to wear masks, not to wear masks, about who's got the greatest numbers. And then we had civil unrest. We had racial disharmony and people focusing in on who's the bad guy, who's horrible. And then we have politics gone amok. I'm not talking only about America. I mean, look around you. All of a sudden, that dream of living together in harmony is gone because we're all chasing that nationalist aspiration. People just talking about politics as personal issues. And the technology taking off the way it is, the us and thems, and the world is basically looking everywhere else except where. Yeah, same thing as 1915. They've got their sights off of Armenia, and you know what? Azerbaijan said, okay, they're asleep. Let's go in there. Oh yeah, I should explain that Azeris are Turks. Yes, they speak the same language. They're the same people. And basically, yeah, they are the Turks. And so it was proven this week when they attacked the Armenians. Sure enough, there was Turkey, Turkish planes. There was Turkey, there was their flag. And there was the rhetoric coming from Turkey about the annihilation of the Armenians. So now it is now 3 days, 4 days that fighting is taking place on the other side of the earth. And we're scrambling to find out what can we do? What can we do from 12 time zones away? What is there to do? And I want to share with you this idea that I'm sure if you are an ethnic Armenian, and I do apologize for so many of you. I know we have a group of people who are on here for the orthodoxy, that are on here for the faith that we talk about, but it is so intertwined with the Armenian ethos that I do want to spend some time talking about this, because there is an issue of identity that is tied in. Because who are we? If you're an Armenian that lives in the diaspora, in other words, lives outside of Armenia, sooner or later you have questioned yourself, or you question yourself. It's inevitable. When you start thinking about who you are, you start thinking about, why am I here? Wait a minute, there's a place called Armenia. There's a place that Armenia is referred to as our homeland, and I'm here. I'm here in America, I'm here in South America, Australia, Africa, Europe. I'm not in Armenia. What am I doing? Why am I not allowed there? And then you start putting the puzzle together and you realize, oh, we were thrown out of our homeland. Somebody decided that we didn't belong there. There was killings. There was genocide. And so we have this strange upside down situation where you have a country and there are more Armenians that are living outside of that country than there are inside of that country. Oh, you say, did that happen by accident? No. No, it didn't. And that's one of the outcomes of genocide. And genocide took place. There was a mass exodus from the historic homelands. Quite different from when they talk about a Holocaust, isn't it? Right? They talk about the Holocaust of the Jews. Horrible, tragic, evil, manifesting itself. No question. But it is quite different. We were in our historic homeland. We were sitting in our homeland. Where else should we be? We were thrown out, killed, massacred. And so here it is, 105 years later, and we're finding that these guys want to continue. They want to finish off what they tried to do. And the resistance effort, you blow up with pride that you've got people fighting on that front line. And you say, well, what can I do? You can't do much of anything else except be there as support. That's the reality that you come into terms with. What else are you going to do? Some kid is putting his life on the line, on the front line. What else are you going to do? He's paying the ultimate price. What else can you do but to be supportive? So as an ethnic Armenian, you start thinking about this. Why am I not there? What about these people? How can I help? What is my position in the midst of all this? And so you try to come to terms. Add to that, as ethnic Armenians who are living in the diaspora, we get fueled a lot of times by nationalist talk. For instance, there's a group of songs, Armenian national songs, that focus in on soldiers who are heroes. Zartir Lau, Khelj Mushetsi, it's a Mushetsi, somebody from Mush. And it's not just somebody from Mush, but it's a Khelj, it's the poor Mushetsi who stood up against the evil one, against the Turks. There's stories about Angez Zimbor, about the soldiers and the purity of their heart, wanting to stand and defend the homeland. And there's a whole assortment of these kind of songs, these kind of poetry. And it's even written into the national anthem. Amen aindel mahamine mart mian kambid merni pats yerani vor ir azgi amar. Every place death is won, man will only die once, but blessed is that man who dies for his country, for his homeland. I mean, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. And then you've got a Father Voskin. And then you've got your Christian faith. And you got this priest who's trying to juggle all this together. How many times have you heard me? You put fire out with a hose, not with more fire. And now you're seeing the enemy at the front line. They're firing at you. What do you propose to do? Go out there and put it out with a hose? You've got this priest talking to you about, like, love, a power that Jesus is giving us. Are we using it? And I'm bringing this all up because you are, as a Christian, if you are a Christian and you're practicing and you believe in it, you are faced with the ultimate dilemma, because you're seeing the power of hatred manifest itself. You're seeing that hatred being exploding to the point of it's an all-out war. And you have the commandment by Christ that says, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. And you say, I cannot stand there as this all is all happening. I need to do something about it. And the thing that they're asking you for is they need money right now. They need to buy bullets. They need to buy supplies. And so you're caught up in a double hypocrisy. Double hypocrisy in the sense that if you do something, in other words, you go out there and you support the war effort. You've got to deal with the Christianity that's been preaching, been taught to you. And you're preaching about love and helping and aiding. And on the other hand, if you don't do something, you're talking about people in need, in dire need, a life or death situation. And all they're counting on you is for a few dollars. Send a few dollars so that we can ensure our survival. And if you don't do that, there's your other set of hypocrisy. Like, how dare you sit there and play all this music and recite all these poems about nationalism, and when the time comes, you're not ready to give. You're not ready to participate. And this is a struggle. This is one of those kind of struggles that you need to get out there and support what's going on over there, and then come back to the table and reconcile yourself, because the effort is real on the front line and it needs that support. And so are you, because as a child of the diaspora, where you've actually thought about, like, why am I here, you realize that, hey, I am here because somebody did this to me. Someone did this to my people how many years ago, and I need to get back. And now you start bringing in the factors that contribute to who you are. Namely, that we were trying to establish a global society. You know, when John Lennon writes, imagine there's no country, it's easy if you can. Nothing to live or die for, a brotherhood of man. Imagine, he asks us to imagine that. Yeah, that sounds really good. And I buy into that. I buy into that wholeheartedly. I wish there could be a life like this. Now, this is not a gospel according to John Lennon. The gospel of Jesus Christ tells you that, yes, we are all brothers and sisters. We all come from the same place. It's not John Lennon's gospel. But what John Lennon does by asking us this question is gets us to think. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not that you're adhering to a gospel. What you're doing is you're asking yourself a question. He's the poet. He's the musician who's playing with your feelings and saying, wait a minute. Imagine if there was no country, nothing to kill or die for. It gets you to start thinking about, what are we dying for? What are we killing for? Is it possible that there can be peace? Can we see peace if we give peace a chance? And is there a formula for that peace? Does it mean that we have to give in? Does it mean that we have to fight? Is it possible to attain peace by fighting? These are all questions that you need to define, because you are worth something, and that soul inside of you is looking for these answers. And there are these answers, because none other than some of the greatest church thinkers, for instance, Augustine. Yes, Saint Augustine had dealt, this is of course for the Western church, but fascinating, because, you know, we deal with this constantly, this state of war. He came up with this idea of a just war. It's a doctrine that, you know, that it's almost like a military ethics, one which has been studied by military leaders as well as theologians, ethicists. A just war. Like, are there times where you lift up, the weapon, where it's okay to kill? And then put it next to the question. Nothing to live or die for. A brotherhood of men. These are questions. These are questions that are good to wrap around, to start thinking. We need more people to engage in these conversations and to think about these things. Because what's happening in Artsakh today is something that we knew was going to happen, because the hatred is there. It all stems from a early hatred. We're talking about here in this country, systemic racism. I mean, you have not seen systemic racism till you've lived in those countries over there, until you've seen the way Armenians are treated in a place called Azerbaijan. Yes, 1990s, there were pogroms. Just because you were Armenian. Children were killed too. Children were exiled. And there's so much written about this. We'll put some on the show notes. Do check it out. I mean, educate yourself about this. But these are questions that we have. One such question for me is, it comes from a song that I, the other day when this broke out, and I was just going, trying to reconcile the idea of all that I have said here on The Next Step and what I have proposed through Armadoxy, with the idea that we need to stop this evil dead in its track immediately before yet one more person dies. And I came across a song in my head, a song that I hadn't heard for years, but it just started ringing in my head. 0 to the power of 10 equals nothing at all. That if you take something and you magnify it, and if that something is nothing, and you magnify it as much as you can, even to the power of 10, it's still nothing at all. And when we talk about war, you realize that war is nothing at all. The other day, Bishop Barkev, a man that we all respect very highly, the primate, the bishop of Artsakh, made a statement, and he talked. He was asked straight out, like, you've been doing this for 30 years. You've been praying that God protect these soldiers. What does that mean to you? And he said, you know, this is just a basic civil rights issue that people were trying to manipulate and trying to take over the rights of another group of people. And in hearing the way he spoke and his calmness and his demeanor, it just made me realize that, yes, you know, these are not things that are absolutes, obviously, because there is war. And at the same time, they should provoke some kind of reconciliation in us so that we know we're human, that we're not the barbarian that's on the other side. We know that we are human. For me, someone on the other side, it's not just their ethnic makeup. The idea that someone on that side would calculate how to hit and kill children, because those children will grow up to become Armenian adults. Their whole strategy is to kill the children. That to me is barbarism. That to me is not even human. And that needs to be stopped.
Been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Well, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. Someday it's going to come. Come take me home again. Come on the peace train. Someday it's going to come. Come on the peace train. Come take me home again. Peace train sounding louder. Light on the peace train. Come on the peace train. Isekaya. Is out on the edge of darkness, there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. Someday it's going to come. Come take me home again. Come on the peace train. Someday it's going to come. Come on the peace train. Come take me home again. Someday it's going to come. Someday it's going to come. Someday, someday. Someday it's going to come.
Now, I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss?
Isekaya, 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 isekaya. Peace train sounding louder, light on the peace train. Someday it's going to come. Come take me home again. Come on, peace train. Someday it's going to come. Come on, peace train. Take me home again. Come take me home again. Come take me home again. Come take me home. Come take me home. Take me home again. Someday it's going to come. Come take me home again. Come take me home. Come take me home. Come on, peace train.
Thank you. And peace be with all of you.
Peace Train by Cat Stevens, of course. That's it. the Royal Albert Hall. That's off of a Extras recording of Teaser and the Firecat album that Cat Stevens did back in the 70s, and a re-recording. I'm not sure exactly when that particular recording was done, but I thought it'd play a little different melody, a song that we grew up on, Peace Train. I've been thinking lately about the good things to come. We do a song of the day every week, and song of the week, I guess, and just give us a little bit of time to digest what was said, and then we continue with the show. Check the show notes. There'll be a link to the song and more information about the artist.
Something must be wrong with me and my brain. If I'm so patently unrewarding, but my dreams are for dreaming and best live that way. And my zero TO bar of 10 equals nothing at all.
Zero to your power of 10 equals nothing at all. You know, we're talking about war. We're talking about war taking place in Artsakh, someplace close to home, someplace very close, because, you know, around the base of Mount Ararat is the cradle of civilization. Mount Ararat is the historic mountain, the biblical mountain, where Noah's Ark, according to tradition, Genesis chapter 8, Noah's Ark lands on the holy mountain of Ararat, and therefore life begins there, the cradle of civilization. And it's under attack. Yes, it's a few miles away from Artsakh. There are miles that separate it, yes, no question about it. But it's just the people. It's the Armenian people who are under attack. You start thinking about the concept of war. What is your responsibility? What do you do? What if you aren't ethnically Armenian? Does this matter that a group of people, innocent people, are being attacked by barbarians who have calculated that their children should be attacked? What is your response as a Christian? What does it mean? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see God. When you sit there and you realize that this was your chance in life to make a difference, and you just sat there. Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, not the people who sit back peacefully, but the peacemakers, the ones who make peace. That's what we're challenged to do. And how do you bring about that peace? And there have been theories, you know, like I talked about, there was just war. I remember growing up during the Cold War. And there was this policy of mutual annihilation. In other words, get more powerful and more powerful so that all you can do is you can guarantee that there will be mutual destruction and annihilation. And that would put somebody in check. This is what we believed. This is what was talked about. And in a real sense, that's what it's about right now. Why wouldn't another country, an aggressor country, hit the button and annihilate you because you can annihilate them? So it's basically putting them in check. And this is a strategy of war. And we in the religious community are looking at it and we're saying, well, wait, we follow the tenets of one who came in peace, who spread peace, who talked about love and talked about overcoming evil with love. And we're saying, can we apply this to our lives? And then there's a very big threat right at the border because you don't have time to apply that to life. They're killing right now. So it's a conflict. And there have been strategies that have been written about wars. There have been there's been philosophies. And not just in our times. I'm talking from time immortal, since early times, since the caveman first beat up the other caveman. And they said, this hurts. And said, why did I hurt somebody? Because he was hurting me first. And then you start developing it. And are we born to hurt one another? Are we born to love? Was someone like Hitler, was he ever a baby? Like, did a mother ever look at this little Hitler and say, hey, this is a cute little baby? Or was he just basically evil, born evil, and therefore destined to kill? Like, did he have a choice, right? We've talked about this. Free will or determinism? Are you determined from the beginning? And it goes back to the question of Judas. Is Judas the hero of the story or isn't he? I mean, did he betray Jesus? And if he hadn't betrayed Jesus, would Jesus not have gone on the cross? Would then there be no salvation for us? Was it mandatory? Was it necessary? Is he at fault? And the same thing, you look at a Hitler and you say, was he, did his mother look at him? And should his mother have just killed him right there? Yeah, there's people that will argue that. Yes, of course. If the mother had just killed him in the cradle, right? Then obviously you wouldn't have had an Adolf Hitler later in life. Or would something else have... And you can do these mental gymnastics, as I call it. You can go through these exercises, and it's not an exercise in futility. That's what I'm saying. It is if you let it overwhelm you, but what you need to do is ask these questions so that you can define who you are, how you live in this world. What are the parameters? What is your faith all about? That's where you come face to face with your faith. And this is the big question. Last night, I was asked to give a sermon. Every night this week, we're doing services. First night was for those who sacrificed their lives, those who fell. We remembered the names, and this was very, very difficult to listen each of the names, and you'd hear a bell after the name of each of those people, the innocent people who died in Artsakh. And it was very haunting. It was difficult to listen to those bells. You know what? I'll make sure that there's a link on today's show notes to all of the services. But if not, you know, just go to the Western Diocese Facebook page and you'll see all of the services are there. It was very difficult until you realize that the difficulty of those parents who had to listen, who knew that their child had no chance. You know, we're talking about kids on the front line, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. Yeah, no, I need to say this. The Army doesn't take in 15-year-olds. But there are 15-year-olds that realize that that's their obligation. Just like there's older men who are going up to the front. And then you think about the soldiers. So the first night we remembered that. The second night we remembered the parents who had to deal with their child ending their life on that front line. And last night, the bishop asked me to speak about the Army. Our prayer was towards the Army. Now, what do I say? You're somebody that you know me as Next Steppers, that, you know, my message has been that we need to cultivate a language of love. And what do you say about the Army? And the more I thought about it, I pictured myself in the shoes of that soldier. What is that soldier? That soldier at 17, 18 years old, standing on the front line, he's looking out into the darkness of a place called Azerbaijan. And he's standing on his soil, which his people have stood there for centuries. It is his soil, and he's charged to guard it. He's the one soldier. And you can imagine his fear, but it's overtaken by the courage that he has. One courage that comes from God above, and another courage, how? By the guy to his left, the guy to his right. And together they make up what's called the army. The army is the strength. In other words, you as an individual are one person until you latch on to someone else. And then you start creating. Think about what Jesus says. Where two or three of you are gathered, there I will be also. And when you think about that, you say, oh, Jesus didn't say, if I am saved, I am a Christian of one. No, I need to latch on to somebody else. Two or three of you. In other words, there needs to be a community. I am with you there. And all of a sudden you realize that's the strength. That's the key. That's the army. Army, not just one soldier, but a multitude. The heavenly hosts, we sing Reshtagayin, Hazarats Reshtagayin. It's in the Divine Liturgy every week. Thousands of heavenly hosts are serving God. Pur Purk. Pur in Armenian is the 10,000 mark. Like tens of thousands of soldiers, of heavenly hosts. These are the ones who are upholding heaven in a sense. And so here in this world, it's not just that one soldier, but it's an army of people. And now you say, pray for that army. Well, what's your obligation to pray for that army? What is your obligation? Your obligation is not just to say, oh, good for you, army. You know, you're a good army. It's to understand that that soldier who's on the front line is looking for strength. And he's looking out into the darkness, and his strength is coming from God above. He's got soldiers on the right and left of him, but who's behind him? And that's where you come in. That's where you become the army. We become the army. And each of us is called to be a part of that army. Yes, there is a guy that's holding a gun, but he needs to look behind and see you. He needs to know that you're behind him. And so think about it in these terms. As Christians, we are consecrated. In the Armenian Church, we have the tradition after baptism, you are consecrated with Holy Miron. The Holy Miron is the life energy. It's the force. And that force is being put upon all the senses. And every child who is baptized of the font receives this Holy Miron chrismation. And so now all of a sudden his hands are there to do the work of God. His mouth has been consecrated, so he speaks the word of God. His ears have been consecrated, so he hears the word of God. His feet to walk the course of God. Now think about this, okay? There's an evil such as war, and there is God. Do you stand by and let war take over, or do you stop it? And all of a sudden, it clicks. There's your answer. If you are an agent of peace, blessed are the peacemakers. How can you allow that war to continue? And so you realize that you have to come to terms with finding a means of ending it as quickly and as efficiently as possible. In other words, efficiently means the less deaths, the better, right? This morning, I got a call from my spiritual brother, Father Tade. He is the priest in Tallinn. Exactly a year ago today, we came back from Tallinn, where we met with the Sasunsis in Sasnašen. Sasnašen is a village on the northwest side, on the Turkish border. In that last night, we sat and we ate with the Sasunsis, and they danced, and Their dances were dances of war, were dances that expressed the strength and the determination of the people. This morning, Father Tade called me to tell me two things. He says, don't worry about Armenia, we're okay. He says, we will win this one. And also gave me the news that he was doing 3 funerals already of people who from his villages have gone to the front. And I wish you could hear the confidence in his voice, the determination in his voice, because it's something that you realize that this is beyond, this is not human, this is God's grace. And so when God enters into the picture and you have been consecrated with that Holy Miron, now you have an obligation to do God's work. And so for that soldier, he now finds an army of the heavenly hosts from above with God above, and an army here on this earth, on his right and his left side with people who are standing with him and with us behind him, to be able to support, to be able to help, to be able to console. And so if you have a mouth, you need to speak. If you have feet, you need to walk. If you have hands, you need to do the work. Basically, we become the army for which we pray. In other words, thy will be done. How does that will be done? Well, by the mission that Jesus Christ set up. Here is my church to do the work of God here in this world. And now you got to come to terms with it. You have to come to terms as a human being, you have, who has a conscience, who has a faith, who has to reconcile everything. Because evil is evil. And Jesus did say, under no uncertain terms, he says, you have heard that it's been said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist evil. If someone slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other cheek as well. If someone wants to sue you and take you to your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. What? Well, yeah. That's what he says. Okay, now you got to reconcile this. It's not enough to just stand up and say, hey, we're the first Christian nation. And then when they come and they push it in front of your face and they say, well, if you're the first Christian nation, why are you guys out there fighting? Why don't you just put down your weapons? You need to be able to answer that in an intelligent way, in a manner that is befitting of the dignity of your being, of your faith. I mean, yes, I'm the first person who will tell you I do not want to see a war. I do not want to see one drop of blood that is unnecessary to be dropped. And I'm one of those people that believes that all life is life. If you're going to take out somebody else, they're going to take out you. Those lives are equal. In other words, in the sight of God, we're all his children. So if you're hurting somebody else, you're hurting God's child. You can't do that. I'm the one who's been telling you that, who's been preaching. But I also at the same time know that you've got to stop evil. You've got to do something to stop that evil, especially when it's taking place in the form that it's taking place now. Unsuspecting people in the middle of the night, in the sleep, coming and hitting and targeting civilians and killing them. You can't have this. Because, you know, this is one of the other things that Father Tade told me. He was talking about the Pan-Turkism. Now, that's something that we all know. That Armenia is that one link, like a chain. It's that one link that prevents Pan-Turkism between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, being this one big Turkish nation. But there's Armenia, this small little piece of land around the base of Mount Ararat, the biblical mountain. And you know that people want to destroy that. Yeah. So there is evil. And you need to be able to answer the call for evil. You need to have some kind of a system that you can answer, not to anybody else, but at least to yourself, so you feel good. So you understand and you come to terms with your faith. If you remember a few weeks ago, we talked about, I shared with you some of the writings of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, a Christian theologian in the middle of Nazi Germany and seeing what Nazism is doing and the killings it's doing. And he ended up being a martyr for the church because you've got to reconcile these things. When we talk about the army of Christ, are you in the army of Christ? Does that preclude you from becoming an army of a country? Questions. And that's what we've been doing from the beginning. Next step. That's what we've been doing all along. It's about questions. It's about imagine there is no country. Imagine there is no heaven. It's not a theology of John Lennon. It's a question which gets us to think. It stimulates a discussion. It gets you to go beyond and please understand this term, the Sunday school mentality of Christianity. When you're a child, St. Paul says this, you speak like a child, you think like a child. But as you grow up, you have to have some more mature way of looking at it. And I find so many people that are caught up with this childish understanding of God. Oh yeah, God's going to come from the sky and he's going to blow out the coronavirus. And when he blows, it'll all go out. That's just as absurd as when President Trump said, you know, swallow some bleach and it'll kill the virus inside of you. Or inject some bleach, whatever he said. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. No, there is a maturity and it's important. it's important to see why do mature people have a life of faith, because it's not a fairy tale. It's not some Sunday school lesson. Sunday school lessons are important for children to have a basis, to have the basics. But as you grow up, as St. Paul says, I put away childish things. In the same way, take some time right now to think about where you're at. You cannot allow evil to continue. Is it in your hands? Certain parts of it are. Not all of it, but certain parts are. And that's why I said, if you have hands, you need to work. If you have feet, you need to walk. If you have a mouth, you need to talk. St. Paul says that we are all part of the same body, but different functions. And an eye doesn't turn to a feet and say, you can't see, therefore you're useless. No, an eye sees and a foot walks, and we are all part of this big equation. And we all have to work towards peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see God. It's that simple. And in that simplicity is the complexity. Because if you think that just by listening to this 1 hour, whatever this podcast is going to be, we're going to give answers. No, you're not. It's just like everybody who expects, oh, let me go and see what's on Facebook. Hey, somebody posted this. It's not the answer. It's a Facebook post. And it's a video. I saw it on Instagram. It's an Instagram post. Tweet. Let's tweet it. The name itself tells you what it's about. No, take some time. A maturity requires praying, requires meditating, requires engaging in conversation, requires education, educating yourself. And when you do that, you start finding that new doors open. New avenues of perceiving the way the world is running, the way it's functioning, and how we can attain peace. I'm going to end it here. Let Susie make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple of minutes to give some final parting shots and some direction. Okay.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you. I want to thank you all for all of your love and support of this podcast and of our ministry. I really appreciate it on behalf of our wonderful team and myself in particular, because you don't realize how much strength you give me. And there are certain times in a ministry where you just are really like beat. You get beaten up. And the only thing that keeps you going are two things. One, to know that there are other people who are truly sacrificing. And that's what we're finding out, especially during this war right now. Last few days, you realize that if some kid's out there on the front line giving his life, there really isn't much you can say that I could give that's more than that, you know? Anything we do will be always just minimized next to that value of life. So, you know, there are those expressions. And the other thing is just the expressions of love and support, because sometimes it does get lonely. And in turn, that's where it's our obligation to be a support for the loneliness of the soldiers that are up there, for the people. Now, they have told us straight out from Armenia that right now what they need more than anything is money. They need to buy things, and I won't get into the details of what, but there is a very easy way of giving and contributing to the resistance effort that is taking place in Armenia. They've asked all money to go to the All Armenia Fund. And I will put a link on today's show notes. And I strongly strongly advise that you not only make a donation, but you get your kids involved. You tell your kids that this is a national crisis that needs everyone's attention, that you get your neighbors involved, and you tell them, even if you're not Armenian, this is an issue of good versus evil. And you tell people about it. I'm also going to put a link on today's show notes to the ANCA. Very easy to get activated. They've made it very easy. You just make a call. You actually log on, and they make the call for you to your congressperson, to your senator, to the president. In other words, politically, let's get some noise out there. Let people know that our soldiers are not alone. So All Armenia Fund for your money, for your monetary donations, and the ANCA, where you could write to congressional people, sponsors. And I'm sure that those of you in different countries know how to do it and get the word out. And thirdly, keep yourself and your mind and your spirit healthy. Very, very important, because the news that comes out is very downing, and it brings you down. In fact, the call that I received today from Father Tade in Sasnashen in Tallinn, I mean, you can't believe what it did to me, because you read and you see these images coming from the war zone, and to hear a voice of somebody like that from the war zone and telling you that, you know, we're going to make it. God's on our side. And we're seeing things change. And you realize that that's your little lifeline there. So keep things positive. Get involved at our website. Get involved with our blogs, with our writings, Diocesan Facebook page. Every day there's messages. Read those things. Use them as discussion with your family. You don't need to agree with everything. But don't get caught up in the cycle of negativity. But see the good things. See the power of God and the miracles that take place every day. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. You're next steppers. You know what I'm talking about. I'm going to end it right here. If all goes well, this Sunday I should be at St. Leon Armenian Cathedral, Saint-Paul's. I'm honored that His Eminence has asked me to offer the liturgy and to deliver the sermon on this Sunday, the first Sunday after the bombings, the shellings, the killings, the war in Artsakh. And I ask that you pray for me just as you pray for the soldiers and the army, because I pray for you. We are praying for each other. We're part of that army. And as they say over there, Hachdeluenk, we are going to win. And by the way, that was the way our conversation ended this morning with Father Tade when he called me. He says, we're winning. He says, we're going to win. And that's the promise of winning evil. You're winning evil with the good. So let's keep each other in our prayers. Keep Armenia in your prayers. Keep those soldiers in your prayer. Keep our army in your prayer. And keep goodness in your prayer. That's how we end today. Get involved any way you can. Check out the show notes for a lot of different links to connect with different sources of information and giving. So on behalf of this wonderful team who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Daddy, old man, you failed in a trap!